Blog Talk Radio.
For Saturday, September 7th, 2019, you are listening to the PW Torch Daily Cast, a collection of shows each day, different host, different subject. Saturday, however, 6 p.m. Eastern, you are listening to The Deep Dive with Rich Fan. I am, of course, Rich Fan, brought to you by the tears of crazy people who thought Antonio Brown was going to languish in mediocrity and free agency and not sign with anyone. As a pro wrestling fan watching this and seeing this insanity play out, it's definitely pure pro wrestling at its finest in terms of dealing with someone who wanted to be somewhere, then didn't want to be somewhere, then wants to be somewhere else. And either you're an employee or you're an independent contractor. And so for me, watching this play out and then watching here in Pittsburgh, Steelers fans lose their minds, watching Buffalo fans get reporters to put emojis up and celebrate how they dodged a bullet and now the Patriots have Antonio Brown, you love to see it. And so I'm going to bring my partner in crime on, one of my best friends in the world. The reason I love Dean Malenko so much is because that Four Horsemen poster I had up in my college dorm 20 years ago allowed me to meet one of five men, and one of them is going to be with us now, Justin McClellan. You have heard him several times here on the Deep Dive. Justin, welcome back.
Thanks, Rich. Good to be here. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. I have some schadenfreude as I watch the Bills and Steelers fans lose their mind. In fact, my mother-in-law threw a shoe at me because I mentioned Antonio Brown might sign with the Patriots before I left. And then when he did, I don't even know.
But I mean, die. I don't know. Like, from a Steelers perspective, isn't she just happy he's, like, out of her hair?
No, they want him to, like, wallow in mediocrity and, like, fall into a sinkhole and never come back.
Oh.
So now that he's gone to the Pats, where he can get the seventh ring the Steelers currently don't have, and then on top of
right.
that, yeah, it's just a lot. So how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. I'm doing okay. I mean, it's after Antonio Brown, it doesn't feel like anything else matters today, but I'm sure we'll find something to talk about.
Oh, yeah, and I'm sure we're going to talk about a lot of stuff. I mean, like I said, when we were preparing for this, we got AEW, we got your view as a person watching it on the pay-per-view, thoughts on the wrestling of the week, and, of course, your call. So if you're interested, please give us a call. 515-605-9345. That's 515-605-9345. But before we get to callers and before we dive into anything else that's crazy and in the Antonio Brown school of ridiculousness, why don't you talk to the folks a little bit, Justin, about where you got your fandom and what you do and if they can follow you on the social medias.
I've been a fan for, a long time. Since we're talking The Rock in wrestling era, the first show I really watched was the Saturday Night's main event with the formation of the Mega Powers. So that, of course, was a hell of an angle and obviously hooked me for life. So I've followed pretty close ever since. A couple of years later, I really started, watching Superstars every week and never looked back after that. So that's, I guess, the basis of my history. It's sort of funny to think about stuff I thought about, like, before I got the internet. I didn't know, like, any, like, smart terms or dirt sheets or anything. Like, the smartest magazine I read was Pro Wrestling Illustrated. But I really put together a lot of, like, some of the concepts, even though I didn't have words for them, like pushing and pushes and pops and someone being over, concepts I'd sort of put together in my head. And then when the internet came and I was able to read, like, a more scientific explanation for a lot of those things, I was like, oh, I understand where they're coming from. So I always sort of think about my fandom and divided between those two eras, I guess. Even though, like, I was aware that pro wrestling was not entirely, real, I definitely, you know, had developed my own sort of understanding of it well before I had anyone else to explain it to me, as I think a lot of us of a certain generation did. Going back to Dean Malenko, of course, one of my most exciting moments in wrestling was when Dean was ranked number one in the 1997 PWI 500.
That is a great factoid, and that's why you're nicknaming our friend group the answer. Yeah,
because it really did feel like sort of a validation. Like, you knew, like, I watched this guy, and I know he's great, even though he's, like, you know, not on the top of the cards at all. Like, I always enjoy his matches, and there's something cool and different about him. So when PWI ranked him that, it was a mind blow.
And it was great to hear him at StarCast because, one, he's so funny, and I did not realize he was that funny. And two, the stories he told and the respect that his peers, particularly the rest of the Radicals, had for him was so apparent. And Jericho, I mean, people talk about Jericho. Those guys are contemporaries. Jericho's wrestling at almost 50. Dean, you know, unfortunately now suffering from Parkinson's, is still a coach, their version of an agent in AEW, and is passing on that knowledge to the next generation. And it's wild. You know, one of my favorite gifts is the Dean Malenko handshake gift. And that dude, that's how I always remember him. Same as Lance Storm. Guys who might not have always been, quote-unquote, entertaining, but I always gravitated to them. Just, I don't know. It just was magnetizing.
Yeah. I remember Jericho in one of his books put Dean over as a really funny guy, but, you know, it was not something that ever translated onto screen.
Yeah. And it's and one thing he mentioned when he was talking to Tony Schiavone, he was kind of proud of that because he kept a part of him for the guys in the back and a part – because remember, it was in that tail – and that's what people forget. Even though the Attitude Era in the 90s gets that whole, like, you know, they took down the curtain, you could really see how some people kept stuff together. And that's one thing where the attitude of I didn't – if this was now, people would show that quirky side because they figure I'm going to show all of myself.
Right.
Now, let's see. I see we have some callers. So before we translate over to the callers, I did want to ask you, what is your takeaway from – because this is a question Wade got. I got this from Bruce Lee, not from the Beyond the Grave. We have a PhD recipient named Bruce Lee. That's a great caller on my East Coast Cast show I do with Travis. Do you feel – that Cody being the first challenger to the AEW title is a warning sign? Yes or no, and why?
No, I don't, because it makes sense to me. He is one of the, I would say, top three push singles acts. Three or four? I don't know. You know, he's top five push singles acts. I think in many ways he's the face of the company. I mean sort of like the founding fathers are, like, I feel like are him and the Young Bucks, and Omega's sort of on that. Omega doesn't do a lot, I don't feel, but so Cody's very visible and he's got a good look for a wrestler. It just makes a lot of sense to me to put him in that spot. And just, I mean, from the booking, he has not lost. He had the one draw with Darby Allin, but, you know, if not him, who? I guess is part of it. And also, I feel like as a direction, as much as you can have a direction in four shows spread out over 4 months, that is pretty much the direction that makes sense to me.
And for me, when Bruce asked the question, my response was, if you look at it purely for how they've designed things in the world of AEW, where they're saying is the sports like feel, wins, losses matter, et cetera, et cetera. Cody has one of the best records in the company, you know, 3-1-1 and 3-0-1, and then one tag team loss. And then you also have where he didn't get the pinfall, Dustin did. And
hey now.
Then you pull out the old school territorial kayfabe. This is a former Ring of Honor champion, former NWA world champion, former IWGP US champion, and a former title contender to the IWGP heavyweight title. So this is a guy, it's not like this is the only place he's gotten that shot. And
right.
Looking at the other side where everyone's like, hey, Dusty, you know, we're getting Dusty vibes. Dusty probably was, yes, as he got older, he definitely had the issue of there was a little too much going on there before he got old. But in terms of the booking, when you look at it like 500-foot view, he actually did lose a good bit. And
right.
I haven't seen Cody posited as anything but just a solid wrestler that has been pretty, you know, being in the crowd. Everyone's singing the Kingdom. He comes out, he's getting one of the loudest pops. This isn't like you're grabbing Zack Ryder and saying, here you go, kid.
Well, I don't know. I guess I don't know what people thought would happen when he started his own wrestling company either.
I guess they thought,
you know,
I don't know. I mean, especially when you started having been three of the top acts.
Right. And he was like a draw in the indie scene already. And, you know, he starts his own company. He's probably not doing it so he can go be a jobber.
Right.
Furthermore, I don't know. I also think people are reading like way too much into a small sample size. As noted, it's only been four shows. They really haven't had a chance to build up that many people, so you got to take what you can get from the indie. You know, you got to take the cachet people build up from elsewhere. And he's, like I said, of the people, I mean, he's built up some of the most cachet there is. Like Kenny Omega's huge, but Jericho just beat him on the first show, so that would be sort of – it would be too soon to go back to that well. Pac just got here. Racing through my head, what else was on that show?
Dark Order, Best Friends,
NBU. Yeah, those are all tag acts. I mean, I suppose you could split off to do, like, Daniels or Sky for a one-off, but they're obviously trying to make an impact too. So Cody and Jericho feels like the biggest match you could do right now.
And for some of those other acts, like the first thing I thought of, because there's been a debate on the idea of diversity and inclusion in AEW. And when I asked Tony Khan about the, bringing more, wrestlers of color into the single scene, he said, you know, wait, see, we got storylines. Don't want to talk about it. Obviously in a press conference setting. And I look, and everywhere else in the independent scene, in addition to being an outstanding tag team, the Lucha Brothers are great singles stars. So that's a pair of guys. But again, given the rules they're setting up, if this was WWE, you just need a month and you got a title contender. We just saw that with Lacey Evans. But the way they're positing their company, you're not going to get heat them up 3 weeks and then let's go.
Well, they also haven't – I mean, they really haven't had a month. You know, like I said, it's four shows in 4 months. And,
right.
You know, October 2nd, it'll be a very different company come October 2nd with weekly television. You know, I think to really get a feel for what this company is and where they're going, you know, it'll be very different once we see a weekly television product. Because right now, I mean, they're really kind of glorified PWG, right? They're putting on super shows once a month with minimal storyline behind them. Cody's match probably notwithstanding, but you know, most of them are just sort of like indie super show matches.
Right, and All In was the indie super shows, and as they've transitioned a year later, All Out, while it's still indie-rific, it has died down in terms of like the mega matches, and they're trying to create the story of, okay, who's in the tag division? Eventually, are we going to create a trios division? Who's going to be the women that are going to be on the four when you think about the television show? What's Britt Baker going to do? Britt Baker and Kenny Omega are in very similar situations where they're both had been expected to be at the top of the card, and now they got to fight from underneath. And I'm really intrigued by that and how that goes. And I want to get your thoughts, and I'm going to put a pin in because I want to get your thoughts on Omega, but I feel like some of it's going to bleed into when Chris is on next week because he has a lot to say about Kenny Omega. And
he does.
I'm preparing my New Japan heads for that. It's really interesting to me that I did not expect a pushback on that, especially given, and again, I don't want, people were saying Wrestling War, CM Punk, I really liked his comments at StarCast. Don't let millionaires and billionaires determine how you have your fandom. You can watch everything. And that's where I'm going to be. Hey, I never take any comment I make about ADW as something against WWE or PWG or Beyond Wrestling or whatever. God knows I watch at 2 o'clock in the morning because I can't sleep. Can't stop, won't stop. It's a tongue-in-cheek thing anytime an NXT guy wins or gal wins the title and Triple H does the proud pop-up picture. But now it's seen as vanity, or I see that a lot. Like what do they call it? It's their vanity project. I was like, I don't know, having a billion-dollar company subsidize your indie company is pretty vanity project-y.
Yeah.
But enough of my poop. Let's hear from the people. 862, man amongst men. Thank you for calling and welcome back to the Deep Dive. State your name and where you're calling from.
It's Kylan Rich. How are you and Justin doing this week?
Pretty good.
Good, Kylan. How are you?
I'm very well. Rich, it's been such a long time since we've done this. I almost feel a little rusty here.
Yeah, I've had some taped ones. Work the day job, hashtag, has kept me away from doing a live show, so I've got this one. And then in 2 weeks, I'll have you as well.
I'm looking forward to that. And in 2 weeks, we have mutually decided to do a part two of the episode that Rich and I did last May, I believe, which was where we discussed wrestlers appearing on various TV shows, and due to Wade's liking of that particular episode and me leaving a couple of episodes of various shows out at that time, Rich and I have decided to do a part two of that particular episode.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be really fun.
I think it will too. Oh, and by the way, Rich, I'm still waiting to hear from Mr. Mark Bruttman, our former showrunner of Boy Meets World friend, who agreed to come on this show for a pre-taped interview.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that'd be cool. I mean, I think in the next month between him, hopefully if he can make it, Weston, Cage, Martin Cove's son, and a couple other interviews I've put in the old can, it's going to be Deep Dive Interview Central, and I'm looking forward to that. I really am.
I think you'll definitely like having him on. He's a really nice gentleman and a huge wrestling fan. Going back to as far as 1972.
That's awesome.
Ask him to tell you the Andre the Giant story that he told on another podcast.
Wow. So what do you have for us on this fine Saturday?
Oh, well, my first question for this week concerns the WWE creative team shakeup in light of SmackDown executive director Eric Bischoff apparently. And I'm trying to use my words carefully here because, as you know, I'm somewhat friends with Eric. Apparently struggling to learn the names and characters of the SmackDown roster. And apparently making somewhat suspect hiring choices in the form of former Sons of Anarchy writer Steve Long, who apparently fell asleep during the SmackDown creative meeting on his very first day on the job with WWE. How well or not well does this bode for the future of SmackDown on Fox creatively?
Well, Justin, what do you think?
It's hard to say. I don't want to give you a wishy-washy answer here, but it's hard to say because I think, I mean, it doesn't bode well based on what you've just said, clearly, but I also feel like come October 4th, sort of all bets are off in terms of what they do. Especially, I think words come out, at least rumors, I don't know if it's been confirmed, that they're going to do a draft starting the week after that. So that would shake up, at least not creatively, it would shake up who the talent is. So you could obviously see, I think, a pretty major change in who's going in who the push stars are based off of that. It's hard to say because unlike Raw, where you can kind of, there have been some market differences since we saw Heyman come aboard. Like, I haven't really felt SmackDown's felt very differently. They've been going with this sort of strange mystery plot that's someone, there's some writers that was really actually fairly incomprehensible in the scheme of things, but it's just so kind of outlandish that I think it's brought people back week for week just to try and figure out what the hell's going on, even though I think at this point it's clear we'll never really get a satisfactory answer as to why there were two Vintners running around. You know, SmackDown right now is in a weird holding pattern because they're waiting to go to Fox, and I think it sort of feels like that. You know, a lot of their feuds are kind of running in place, particularly the world title, which is I actually enjoy the Kofi Orton feud, but I think they need to wrap it up and get on to something new, which hopefully they will by Clash of Champions. So, I don't know if that answers the question. That's sort of just what I feel about SmackDown right now. Rich?
Well, for me, I think Heyman's done a great job making the changes. You've seen him sort of subtly and then kind of more overt with the push of, say, a person like Ricochet. And I'm SmackDown, I don't want to presume to know the ins and outs with that. I do know that when it comes to Ryan Ward, for the folks that love NXT, he was the person writing when it was at its heyday, its highest nadir in terms of Bayley, Sasha, and all the like. I feel like you don't lose that overnight, especially losing that on the main roster. It's writing, it's wrestling. I don't get why that became such a thing. But I also like to note how he has not necessarily been labeled as fired or quit. It's just that he's gone. And similar to Casey Cannizzaro, they're very nervous right now about releasing people because they do not want them to go to AEW. They don't want them to go to, you know, talk about it. And obviously they're a billion-dollar company, so they're smart enough to have NDAs. But when it comes to going to another company, you can't not – what are you going to say? Unremember every storyline you ever wrote? That's not going to help. And as Brian Alvarez noted on the Wrestling Observer, right now AEW is run by wrestlers with no writers, and something like Jericho losing his title got turned into one of the most requested T-shirts on pro wrestling tees. And again, I don't want this to turn any time WWE gets mentioned AEW. But I think with SmackDown, that's particularly striking because they're going to be on Fox, and they won't have time to screw around. Pardon my French, so to speak.
Yeah. My second question concerns upcoming pay-per-view events with Major League Wrestling holding its Saturday Night Super Fight pay-per-view on November 2nd from Chicago at Cicero Stadium, and All Elite Wrestling holding its next pay-per-view event, Full Gear, on November 9th at the Royal Farms Arena in Baltimore. Are we already experiencing too many pay-per-views within too small of a span of time, as these companies have all of a sudden gotten pay-per-view deals?
Justin, what do you think?
Short answer, yes. I mean, there's just more than just too many pay-per-views. It's just, I mean, there's too much wrestling, period. There's too much to watch going on. I don't want to complain because it's, I mean, it's kind of awesome. I can, no more wrestling I could ever watch. So that's great in a way, because that means there's always some wrestling for me to watch. But yeah, I mean, for them, you would have to feel something's got to give. Like you said, you're going to have those two shows, and then 2 weeks later, you got the Survivor Series NXT TakeOver pair. When's Bound for Glory? That's somewhere in there too, right?
Yep.
Yep.
Let me look it up real quick.
October 27th, I believe.
2019. So it's October 20th.
October 20th. Oh. So you would have 2 weeks before the MLW.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I think it's a lot. I mean, I was at that point, and I mentioned that on the deep dive a couple of times, and as well as East Coast Cast. I'm at the point now where I'm thinking of the stuff I'm getting rid of in the next 2 months, because I bought Disney Plus for the next 3 years when they had the Disney Plus deal for my Disney D23 club. So that is getting $12 a month out of me, or it got $140 for 3 months, 3 years. So because of that, I am done with Progress. At Progress 100, I'm out. I'll probably drop WXW as well, because at some point they're going to add that tier to the network, and I'd rather save the money for shows I'm not currently watching.
Yeah, come to think of it, I wouldn't be surprised if Triple H and Vince McMahon force the owners of Progress and WXW to set those on-demand services down in preparation for them going on to the future tiered WWE network system.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to me, because I'm a big fan of Progress. I had been for years. The second last year, you had, was it Tyler Bate? No, it was Pete Dunne. He tweeted, you know, the indie's never been better. In England, you guys are off the mark. This is going to help us. I was like, don't ever, you're the company you're dealing with, worry about getting paid. Don't worry about the morality of independent scene, because you signed with the Hulk. You're not talent person number six anymore. You're with the Hulk. And it's okay that buildings are going to get broke, things are going to happen. You have to accept that that's the cost of doing business. Don't feel bad about it. But don't ballyhoo it as a good thing. And now they have that mandate by January 1st. They can no longer wrestle in the UK independent scene, and that's gonna do a good bit of damage to that scene.
Yeah, it's gonna do major damage. And my final question is concerning the Wednesday Night War, not wars, as WWE mangles it. Which of the two Wednesday night programs are you two looking forward to more, and why?
J-Train?
I'm definitely looking forward to AEW more, because, I mean, it is... There is definitely an air of excitement around it. It's the shiny new toy. But also, I mean, I'm kind of bummed about NXT moving to 2 hours and being on USA. Like, part of the joy of NXT was that it was an hour. You could watch it literally any time, like, which, I mean, you still can. But, you know, it was an hour. You could fit it in. I often watch it, like, late Friday night. So, It was a nice breezy show you could get through pretty fast, and now it's, I don't know, those days are gone, and I think the whole presentation of the show is probably going to be overhauled. If they do long matches, for example, you're going to have commercial breaks in the middle. You can't have, like this week we got Adam Cole and Jordan Miles for 20 minutes uninterrupted, and that was awesome, but it's not going to be like that now. So, I mean, it's a bummer. It's definitely... Things are going to change for NXT. We don't know how much, but I'm resistant to change it as it is. So I will watch that show with a heavy heart.
And for me, I'm going to watch AEW, and I'll watch NXT either on Thursday or in pieces, because I anticipate what we'll do with the East Coast Cast VIP is I'll tell Travis what happened on AEW, and I'll trust he'll tell me what happened on NXT.
I figured it would go something like, oh, before I go, since Justin said that he's been a fan since the Rock and Wrestling Collection era started, I figured he would get a kick out of the fact that in the Hidden Gem section of the vault area of the WWE Network, the two kickoff shows to the Rock and Wrestling Connection there being the brawl to end it all and the war to settle the score were uploaded on Thursday morning.
I heard
wow.
that. That's pretty exciting. Yeah, I do want to check that out when I have the chance. Which is rare, it's noted, because there's so much new wrestling coming out. But it is something I would want to try and find.
I'm glad I could help in that. Yeah, the hidden gems reveal is something I always look forward to because I'm a history buff myself, so it's nice to see the full versions of things like the Crockett Cup and stuff like, because as our senior columnist Bruce Mitchell used to say, when these were originally put out on videotape, they would only be like an hour and a half or something, and the finishes were cut out of each match, and people used to be very angry when they bought the tape, so it's nice that we have the excellent team of archivists at WWE that can provide us the full master copy of these events.
Yeah, it is really good. I guess definitely one of the best parts of the WWE Network, just to, you know, these hidden gems, these incredible finds where we have, you know, things so you'd always deserve in urban legends, and now we can watch them.
Any thoughts, Rich?
I love the hidden gems. I think they're great. My question is, when are they going to put all of them up? Because, you know, Bruce and I did the episode of the Bruce Mitchell audio where we went through an entire storyline. But I want to go through like a year of some of the stuff they have, but they only put pieces up, and I want more.
Well, I don't know this for sure, but my obvious thinking would be at some point next year when WWE is finally ready to go to the tiered pricing system of the network, maybe the second highest and highest price tier will have a greater selection of hidden gems with full entrances of each wrestler, or maybe you get the copies with a famous song from the 80s that was edited out of a regular network feed because they didn't want to spend the money to pay for the rights to a girls just want to have fun or something.
Yeah, and that's interesting because you're seeing that now even with the newer promotions like Progress. You look at their older shows, you have some of the songs they had before they used Hot Tag Media, and they're parsing them out with just gunk. And I hate that, not just because it's messing in some ways copyrights and the copyright rules are messing with my memories or the memory of people who actually watched it the first time or watched it in the stadium fresh, but it also kills the emotional reaction you have because you eliminate the crowd noise along with that music.
Yes. I think like a very famous example is Sandman's entrance at the first ECW One Night Stand where they used Enter Sandman and everybody screamed the whole lyrics. And then, you know, if you watch it now, it's like a very genericized guitar riff that has, you know, and all the singing along's gone. Which is actually a problem with watching. Actually, a lot of ECW stuff is like that too. You know, you'll even see people singing along sometimes to like work music that isn't there anymore.
Yeah, like New Jack, Natural Born Killers.
Yes.
Is the soundtrack
to
every match
he's
ever had. And it plays throughout. That was the best gimmick with New Jack. This dude is tuning you up while his music continues to play. That's up there with Jericho singing himself to the ring as far as cool things I enjoy about pro wrestling.
Well, Rich, I think I will see myself off of this particular show before our audience emails you and complains that they no longer wish to hear my voice on this show when you shouldn't have me back on. But it's been a pleasure, and hopefully I'll see you in 2 weeks if nobody riots against their prospect.
Oh my gosh, Kylan, you are fine. I've never received such an email, my friend. I will see you in 2 weeks. Justin, as always, Kylan was great. His questions were great. What do you think of the copyright stuff, though? Especially with the latest, because that's a nice segue. The latest two big issues are, one, Cody still coming out and mentioning the fact he doesn't have the rights to his last name, even though Brandy does. And then on the other side, Ric Flair and his brouhaha currently with the WWE over The Man.
Well, I think you have to take each case. I mean, the cases are very different. In my opinion, the Cody thing is, while I see the legal standing is some BS, because let's face it, the Rhodes name is based off of Dusty Rhodes, who, you know, is not a WWE product at all, and just, you know, and really was Cody's dad. So even if by the letter of the law the WWE is correct, it's just very mean-spirited, I think, and it's a bad look. The Ric Flair thing is ridiculous, however, because he's trying to, you know, trying to trademark a two-word phrase based off of a much longer phrase. And, you know, lots of people call themselves the man in wrestling, particularly since Ric Flair himself, you know, stole another man's gimmick. Maybe not steal, but used another man's gimmick once upon a time. So I just don't see how he has any leg to stand on at that point. What are your
thoughts? I'm pointing, the best thing for me is I've been pointing to Taco Tuesday with LeBron. I don't know if you're aware, he's copyrighted. He's trying to get copyrighted the phrase Taco Tuesday because he's used it on Instagram and his stories and stuff. And even though that's been a thing, no one ever copyrighted it.
It was the plot point of the Lego movie.
This is true. But that's what he's going with. And so I'm really interested to see where this goes. Because
legal counsel, Nick Cooper, said he had some interesting thoughts, which I can't get to right now. But apparently, you know, he could have something of a case.
And that's why I say Flair might also have a situation where he could have a case. Because if you can show in wrestling that's been your phrase, and you're trying to copyright it, just like WWE does that yearly, I think that just happened a couple of weeks ago. Just change things up completely. I think that's, you know what I mean, as far as like getting different people's names and different catchphrases copyrighted for their own usage.
Yeah, but the thing about The Man also, I mean, like I said, it's a variation on his phrase. It's not the phrase he uses. You know, Becky's never said to be the man, you got to beat the man.
Yeah,
which would be a very different thing.
His argument's been because they started the feud with Charlotte, it was like a backdoor method of doing that.
Well, I mean, I guess so, but that's wrestling. That's wrestling, dude.
Wrestling.
It's also reminiscent of when Larry Zbyszko tried to sue Chris Jericho over use of the phrase living legend.
That's true. And think about what happened with Sting. I think people forget that Sting has the copyright on Sting. And the artist Sting had to pay him the rights to use the name. That's the greatest. Ugh, That's one of my favorites of all time. Now, what do you think about that one? That's the flex of flexes.
I mean, I don't know. I always thought that was, I like you, I always thought that one was funny. Although, again, strange. It is kind of strange since, you know, I'm pretty sure the police were around before the Blade Runner, so.
Right.
I don't know. Copyright law. I don't understand it.
Just put the hands up. Hands up emoji.
Any, you know, isn't Mickey Mouse like the actual, as I was reading, somehow parts of Mickey Mouse are public domain because he's so old, but because they've changed him so much, like the modern day Mickey is still a copyright of Disney.
Yep, and that's one of the issues people
you know
have.
Oh, the thing that always makes me throw my hands up with copyright is like when Captain Marvel, like there were multiple Captain Marvels, like DC had a Captain Marvel, and obviously Marvel had a Captain Marvel, and DC could have a Captain Marvel, but the comic book could never be called Captain Marvel.
Yeah, I always enjoy those little.
And eventually they just called him Shazam.
Shazam!
Shazam.
Every time I heard Shazam, I would think of Gomer Pyle. Because I wasn't a
yeah.
DC head growing up, so I didn't know. So when they does the awesomeness in the movie, I'm just like, oh, that's Gomer's deal.
The wizard is Sergeant Carter, just. Think of it that way.
Say my name and you'll have my power.
Yes.
Yeah.
Pyle.
And
Batson?
And it's funny because you think of when you mentioned Disney, that's the best example because so many people have complaints, particularly after the Spider-Man brouhaha, that it's unfair that Disney tries to maintain control over their versions of history and their versions of characters. But there's, you know, to the money-making side of it, not too many people knew the story, the folk story that led to Frozen being made.
Yeah.
Not too many people knew the history of Mulan to the point where they would make a movie. One is a cartoon that would make a crap ton of money, and then now a live action that can be historically accurate that also will make a crap ton of money.
Right.
And with wrestling, that's why this Flair thing's so weird to me because I can see the ridiculousness. Like, okay, so every single person who ever calls himself the man has to pay you money versus WWE. Again, that's why I conflated the Cody thing. WWE actively saying on the way out, by the way, even though your dad made his name outside of our company majority of the time, we're going to keep that last name. And only for
right.
you because Dustin's still Dustin Rhodes.
Yeah, but he was Dustin Rhodes before.
But see,
he went
through
to
wrestling
the WWF.
And that's that weird thing where wrestling logic is concerned. You would assume Cody would also have it.
Yeah,
and
you
Brandy.
Would.
And Brandy shouldn't. Because that's not her last name.
But Brandy, they never called her Brandy, right? Or I forget what her ring announcer name was.
But they.
It's
but
just
the
a weird.
Road, yeah, it's all weird. She was, what was her name? Oh my God. Someone's screaming because I would be screaming right now.
Yeah. Text us in.
Yeah, just
text
the formerly known as, well, right now she's the chief brandy officer. I like that. Eden Styles.
Ah.
Yes. Eden Styles.
Eden Styles. Why would she not keep that name?
I mean, Brandy's pretty strong. Brandy Alexis.
Oh, I was being sarcastic. It's Eden Styles.
Oh.
Is a classic WWE fake name. Like your Jordan Miles
yeah.
and Cameron Grimes.
And her last name's her maiden last name was Reed. So I'm just going to say she's related to the natural Butch Reed and just be done with it.
Obviously.
Right. But yeah, this is wild. I'm looking at all the stuff in the legal minefield, if I can borrow the special one TV joke. Yeah, this for you, what is the thing that most encapsulates what makes a wrestler's IP theirs? Like, obviously, if Nick was here, he'd go through the legal side. But for you, what stands out? Like, for me, this man thing's just got my head in a knot.
Usually, I would say if it's a thing usually in wrestler versus WWF or WWE, if it's a thing you used apart away from the WWE, so it's a character you created on your own, CM Punk, you know, that then it's yours. And if it's a character you only got when you were in the WWE, then it's theirs. Unless, I guess, I don't know. I never understood the MVP rule. I guess he somehow created that separately. The man thing's a little different, you know, because I guess WWF, you could argue, created that for her. I don't know. Obviously, I guess it sort of was. I guess it was a shot at the Flair family, although I never put those pieces together until just now.
Yeah, because that's her feeling at the time, was that they were putting her behind Charlotte because Charlotte was a Flair and royalty and their perfect princess.
Right.
And I don't know. It's weird. It's just weird. I don't know. What I do know, though, is we've come to the near end of our road. So before we get out of here, first I want to thank you for coming.
Not road,
on,
just road.
Yeah, we got to say road. I'm not getting sued. I got umbrella coverage. There's only, I can't lose the house, but I'm not losing my car. I can't be thumbing my way to work. Can't be showing ankle to get the pit.
I understand. It's a steep hill in the winter.
Yeah, it is. It's up and down both ways. No way. I just saw Reggie Bush throw. That's amazing. Reggie Bush had a jumping in the DMs. I'm just enjoying this whole Brown saga. Anywho, before I get distracted again, before we get out of here, Justin, first, thank you. Second, whatever happens with Maitland next week, know that I still love and respect you, because he might just hit me with a chair or something.
Sure.
He's coming for Kenny Omega's soul. I know that. And hell's coming with
him. He is.
What can you point folks to? I know you still have your blog. I know you have your Twitter. Any other projects?
I don't really have the blog anymore.
No!
I don't really. Sorry. And I don't have any projects. You can follow me on Twitter if you want. Just follow links, Rich's link, and there I am. I don't know. I'm just sort of there.
Yeah, that's, I didn't see that level of. That was an Orange Cassidy level of self promotion, my friend.
Thanks.
All right. Well,
I do what I can do.
Shrug. I appreciate you. Well done. I'm going to see you soon. Melissa's leaving from your neck of the woods anyway. She should be getting back from Cincinnati any minute.
You know, I hear all the time she's in Cincinnati. And it's like, I'm just up the road, you know. Nice if you drop me a line, but
I'm putting that in my show notes as well. Some shade on Melissa not stopping in Dayton and more. But I like it. For the folks that know, they know, and the ones that don't, they'll learn.
Right.
But yes, I'll make sure I'll give her some knowledge. Have a wonderful rest of your weekend, and thank you for doing this.
Sure. Talk to you later.
Bye. All right, dear people. That's another episode. Deep dive done. Triple D. As always, I've been Rich. You can find me on Twitter at Rich_Fan. You can email the show at pwtdive@gmail.com. Dive into something new. Challenge yourself. Go plus ultra. Go beyond where you think you can go. Next week will be pre-taped. I'll have my buddy Christopher Maitland talking about Hard Truths about New Japan Pro Wrestling. He's coming for Kenny Omega's soul, y'all. Prepare yourself. In the meantime and between time, I'm not going to say a little bit of the bubbly like Jericho does, but I will steal his catchphrase because he can't sue me because he's not going to hear this. Be good. Love y'all. Later.